The Innerbell Neighborhood Stories Project collects stories from residents who lived in the neighborhoods that were removed by the construction of the Innerbell Freeway in Akron. This project is part of the City of Akron's efforts to transform the decommissioned section of the Innerbell Freeway and to document a part of Akron's history that has been largely missing to date. I'm Roger Riddle, and this is the third and final episode of the Primer on Grief series of conversations with Liz Ogbu of Studio O and Bishop Joey Johnson, Senior Pastor of the House of the Lord Church here in Akron, Ohio. There are some parallels that come up in some of these stories. They get mentioned in the conversations because historically, these things don't happen as isolated incidents. You know, the conversation around beginning to build the Innerbell happens roughly around the same time that Akron experienced the riots in the 60s, as when the Innerbell is getting planned. And then there was also, maybe even prior to that, there are people who share stories about how tough it was for them to get credit, and especially for soldiers who are coming back from war, you know, getting ready to start a life, and then all of a sudden they don't have the resources available to them that they thought they would. And as we come closer to our current time period, we have moments where, even as recent as the killing of Mr. Jaylen Walker, and as Liz, you mentioned, the racial uprisings that we've experienced in the 2020s, as we've experienced that, as well as the response to COVID and the pandemic, all of these things are parallels in a way. It doesn't seem like it, but as you start to talk to people and they start to talk about their trauma and their grief, some of these other stories come up, and there seems to be something that ties all of these together in a way where one sits on top of another, until it becomes so heavy that you feel obligated to do something about it. And that's kind of where I felt I was, and I'm not exactly sure, but I feel like some of the people who were sharing their stories felt like they were in that moment. And I am just curious about your thoughts on how these pieces that we can kind of talk about them separately, but they are so intertwined as part of the grief and trauma experienced by the city and the residents in these cities. How do we address that in this moment?
Historically, we are dealing with The Color of Law is the book. It's a great book. And it deals with, I think it was HUD and their decision to fund these urban renewal projects and do this across the nation. It didn't happen in one place. It happened across the nation. So, I mean, that's a systemic kind of impact that I think is one aspect. Number two, you have the emotional reality that grief is cumulative. It is not singular. And so these cumulative events add one on top of another to your response is often out of balance with what it is you're experiencing. You're dealing with what just happened, but you have a backlog of experiences that are grieving and that have not been grieved. So in grief recovery, we do what we call a loss history graph. And we actually graph every major thing that takes place in your life. And when people can see some of the losses across time, it has a profound impact upon them because they can't conceptualize it. When you're sitting there and you're trying to think, okay, well, what's going on with me and whatever, well, you can't, but when you graph it and you say, in 64, this happened, in 66, that happened, you know, at 70, my dog died, in 80, I got a divorce, and then the neighborhood was destroyed. Then you understand this cumulative effect.
And I would also say, I think, you know, one of the challenges of living in the society that we do is that, you know, over the decades and the centuries, we've changed the people. We've maybe changed laws and we've changed some of the conditions, but we have not actually changed the structural underpinnings of our society that is built fundamentally on a racial hierarchy, right? And on an injustice hierarchy. And so until the hard work of that is actually done, every generation will face this. Now, that is not to say that, we're screwed. I think actually, if anything, the level of conversations that I am seeing, or even the fact that we can sit here and have this conversation about grief, right? I cannot imagine that happening a decade ago. So I think it's also that we have to take stock and look at things are changing. And I would also argue that at the end of the day, you know, every system is made up of people. And even though the actors have changed, I don't know that we've done the hard work we need to do of having people actually change how they relate to one another, how they understand the grief that they hold, the trauma that has been caused, and commit meaningfully to breaking the cycle. And so I think the work that is needed now is the people work, right? That's what the storytelling is about. That's what this conversation is about, is if we can get each of us to be able to hold our grief and each of us to be able to meet one another while holding our grief, then there's an opportunity to break the cycle that can then ripple up to actually changing these structural systems that generation after generation have been causing conditions of racial harm.
There are the people who feel like we're not doing enough. There are people who feel like, well, this isn't going to ever be solved, so what's the use? And we have a saying in church, I'm not where I ought to be, but thank God I'm not where I used to be. I think there is a long-term view we have to have. And I've often spoken about this with people. In particular, this is a particular one of those issues and one of those situations where it's really, really prevalent. We need to know, okay, no, we may not ever get where we think we need to go, but we're not where we used to be. There's some progress that has been made. And can we live with that progress as we continually move forward? Because it is the right thing to do. The goal is not always as important as the process. And that process is where we are.
Yeah, totally. And I, you know, I had this moment like 2020, 2021, when things were really crazy. I just like, what is going on? Where are we? Is any of this worth anything? And one of my teachers was teaching about, in Indigenous traditions, there's this framework of seven generations, right? That you have seven generations behind you and you have seven generations ahead of you. And your thoughts, your actions aren't just about you in this lifetime. It is about you in that continual thread of those seven generations. And it made me think of, what if I were to think of the things I am doing as a relay race, and that my team are those generations of ancestors and descendants that I am connected to. And what they need from me is to run my best leg. And the way in which I run my best leg is to do what I can do to make contributions, to do what I can do to heal myself and to support the healing of my community. And that is, I'm not the last leg. I'm not going to hit the end of the race. I'm not going to know what happens at the end of the race. But my job is clear. My ability to support us getting to the finish line is also clear. And so I think when we think sometimes that like nothing we do makes a difference, or we're at the mercy of everything that exists around us, I think we do actually have ownership of things that we can do. And that's not to say that there aren't certain structural issues that we are fighting against, that we have no control over. But I think there are things that we have that are within our control, and our ability to understand that is part of what's needed to actually get us to a place where we can live our lives from a healing-centered place.
The fact that we're still here says a whole lot.
Indeed. And I think you all are touching on something that I do want to make sure we cover, because I don't want to just bring everyone down and think that by listening to these stories that you are just going to be filled with negative emotion. No, like, these stories are beautiful, even in the pain that's being shared. Not to mention, some of these stories are, there are moments of humor. There are moments of love that get shared. There's a full spectrum and range of emotions that's getting shared. So don't go into this thinking that you're only going to hear the worst. You're going to hear some wonderful stories from a lot of beautiful people. And that being said, by listening to these stories, it does contain an opportunity for us to heal, which is what you were getting at, Liz. There are moments where you can feel uplifted through these stories. And even if the pain and grief comes to the surface, it offers an opportunity for you to begin doing work that can heal. And I am curious, from both of your perspectives, what are the things that people can begin to do to assist in that healing, whether it's a personal healing or healing in the community or even the healing of the city?
I think right now, I'd like to stay with the same theme. I mean, it's a wonderful question, and I'd like to branch out. But I think the story right now is it's our theme. It's something that we're gravitating around, and there is something supernatural, something invisible, something powerful around stories. And I think one of the things we have to do is keep those stories alive. Don't let those stories die. And that's what I'm afraid of for the Inner Belt Project, that we're going to do something and we're going to finally put the cap on it, and we're going to say, oh, that's it, now we've done it, and there's the monument, and so let's go. But the stories are what it's about. The people, their lived experiences that has fed into the courage that allows us to still be alive today, to still have hope today, to still move forward today. I think those stories are critical to that particular perspective, and we ought to keep them alive, embellish them, keep talking about them. I regret that I had an aunt that was somewhat senior, and she was telling me some of the history, and I wrote it down and I lost it. And because now I don't have those resources, it's gone. I can't turn to my father or my mother and say, so what happened back here? Or what? I just have to try to remember and reconstruct. But there are some powerful stories that help me to know who I am, why I am here, and what my purpose is.
Well, that was a sermon. Someone is never truly gone if you have access to their story. And so there are way too many people who are gone already, whose story we do not have, that I think part of our responsibility here is to make sure that we preserve the stories and that we continue to speak the stories, right? Like, I think that there's definitely no point in doing all this work to collect the stories if it's just going to exist gathering dust somewhere, or that nobody ever goes to check the website around it. So I hope that these stories will continue to be spoken, whether it's in the newspaper or in the classroom or over a dinner table. So I would say, if you listen to these stories and you feel impacted by them, please share them. Please talk about them. Please like hold parties around them or discussion sessions around them. Make sure that we don't ever stop listening to them, because as long as we can keep alive where we have been, it makes it possible that where we go is governed by an understanding of mistakes we don't want to repeat and things that we want to continue to uplift. And so I think that that's a really important thing to do. And then just going back to what you were saying, Roger, about the fact that there is like both grief and joyful things in these stories. There's a, I seem to be the queen of quotes today, but there's a quote by Martin Prechtel that says, if we don't grieve what we've lost, we can't praise what we love. And I just think that, you know, to see our grief is an act of love. Because if you have grief for something, it means you loved something. And so I think whether you're a person who was directly impacted by the Inner Belt, or you're feeling some deep pain just from hearing these stories, what you're experiencing is a love for a community and a love for Akron. And that is important, right? Like, it's that seed that's going to make sure that we can turn this story that has some very sad elements into it and some very hard and harmful elements into it, into something that we can be proud about in the future. Like, that's important to know that we can feel that. And so I think not only is it about keeping the stories alive, but making sure that in not turning from our grief, we try to set up the conditions that there are spaces that we love in the future.
One of the things that has helped me immensely through this whole process is that I speak with a therapist on a regular basis, and sharing what I've been hearing and how I've been working through this with my therapist has been incredibly helpful. So one of the things that I would like to recommend for anyone is, if you get to a point where you feel like you would like to talk to someone professionally, there are resources out there to help you find someone locally. And nowadays, thanks to products like Zoom, online telehealth, you can find someone that you can reach out with, someone that you connect with. It's important to do the research and make sure that you are comfortable with the person. You don't always go with the first person you find. You may want to have a conversation with them, have a conversation with a few people. Also, we talked about, because Bishop Johnson is a grief recovery specialist, there are grief recovery specialists who are here in the city that you may be able to connect with. Bishop Johnson, I'm wondering if you have any resources to help people find a specialist that they can reach out to.
Absolutely. You can go to the grief-recovery.com website and find a grief recovery specialist near you. And they will be one, they'll be so happy to help you.
Liz, do you have any resources that you can think of that people might want to explore to see if they can find some help that way as well?
Yes, I was actually just trading resources with Bishop over email recently, and I had recommended a site called What's Your Grief? That's really great in that it actually has grief resources for a wide range of things that might be causing you grief, which is really helpful, whether it's the death of a loved one, a divorce, or, you know, something on the scale of this, a sort of often referred to as an ambiguous loss. So there's many things that you can find there, and it's meant to be really quite accessible for the average person like me, who's not a grief specialist, to be able to check out and understand. But yeah, I just want to note that anything you may be feeling is actually okay. There is really nothing wrong with you. The fact that you're even taking the time to listen to this is an important act. And I hope that whether it's a therapist, which I also strongly endorse, a grief recovery specialist, or going to this website and looking up books, I hope you'll just take the time to seek the support that you need, because you don't, this whole thing is not about making you feel bad. It's about supporting you to get on a road to healing.
The Inner Belt Neighborhood Stories are produced by me, Roger Rowe. Our executive producers are Liz Ogbu of Studio O and the City of Akron. Our music is by Flaco Torres, with additional sounds by Become Stardust. Special thanks to Summer Hall, Fred Wheat, Dylan Garitano, Mike Meyer, the Ohio and Erie Canalway Coalition, and a very special thank you to the Reconnecting Our Community Advisory Committee.